Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sustainable Finance Podcast. My name is Paul Ellis, and I'm your host for these programs about developments in this fast-growing industry. According to the Boston Consulting Group, plant-based innovation will grow from a $39 billion market today to $290 billion by 2035. Our guest in today's episode supports a global food systems transformation based on investing in public sector companies up and down the food and materials supply chain. Elizabeth Alfano is CEO of VegTech Invest and an advisor to the VegTech Plant-Based Innovation and Climate Exchange Traded Fund, that's symbol EATV, E-A-T, V as in Victor. This ETF invests in sustainable food and materials innovation and the game changer founders, disruptors, and trend makers with the vision and technology to create a food secure future. Hello, Elizabeth, and welcome to the Sustainable Finance Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
We're very glad you could join us today. We've been wanting to get more into food programs, sustainable agricultural programs for months now, because I like to eat, and So let's get launched into the questions that we have for you today. And we'll start with the pain points that are currently in the global food system that indicate the need for significant plant-based change. Can you bring our followers up to date on those issues?
Yes. So happy to be here. And so thank you, everyone, for listening. We are in a very exciting time. So you see that we're shifting from, gas cars to electric vehicles. We have novel energy. The food system is going through the same kind of transformation. So many say to me, but why would food change? I just went to Costco and everything looked great. Well, beneath the surface, many things are not working. First, food is incredibly natural resource intensive. That's things like land and water. Now, we're going from 8 billion people on the planet to 10 billion people, according to the United Nations, by 2050. But you're not getting more land and you're not getting more water. In addition, China, India, Africa, all developing a middle class. That middle class wants to consume more, and that means consume more meat, one of the most inefficient commodities out there. Again, in terms of that land use, energy use, water use, it's one of the reasons why the United Nations Environment Program says that the leading cause of deforestation and biodiversity loss, both created by animal agriculture. So we have more people and more people who want things, and not enough land and water to create the necessary food. Now, this might not impact your Costco in your zip code, but make no mistake, food insecurity around the globe is an issue of national security for the U.S. This is not something politicians anywhere want to see. Of course, very hard to get elected if you can't feed people. And when other people can't eat, they don't just sit around. They go to where there's food. And that's why it's a problem for the United States. So we see this very inefficient, very long supply chain, very expensive cost of goods sold, how we produce food today, causing a problem in many ways, environmentally, but also that risk of food insecurity. So what you see is companies and countries around the globe innovating to make more resilient food supply chains. You maybe remember during COVID, empty shelves, people scrambling for food. And then the same, almost right after COVID, that same panic, the Ukraine war. What about wheat? India stopped exporting. You see how these long supply chains are very inefficient, very risky, very costly. So you see lots of innovation in this sector. Not because, just to be clear, not because there's a small group of vegans. I mean, I like vegans. This is not meant to be disparaging, but they're a small group of people who have no political power and no money. So we're not talking about some small, insignificant little group. We're talking about food for all of us, and the system that we have now worked great in the 50s when we had 4 billion people on the planet. Doesn't work at 10 billion. And innovation, which is this fantastic opportunity to invest, is a very bright hope for the future and a very bright spot for investors.
Well, thank you for that review of where we are today. Let's explore what this kind of system-wide change that you're proposing and that you work on looks like going forward. And what does it mean to the average person, the average consumer at Costco and Whole Foods and that kind of issue?
Thanks for that question. Just a teeny clarification. I'm not proposing it. I'm just saying that it is underway. Okay. It is already happening. It is an investment opportunity. And we undertake that investment opportunity at VegTech Invest with our food systems innovation ETF.
Thank you for clarifying that.
So it's not my will, if you will. It's happening, and make no mistake. So for the average consumer, most likely they won't notice much of a difference in the beginning. Certainly meat's not going away, but how we make meat, and is meat the only way to get protein? I'll give you a great example. Think of the almighty potato chip. What could you do to that beautiful potato chip? It's oil and salt and potato. Nothing could be better. Well, apparently you can do a lot. You can bake it. You can fry it. You can stand it in a can. You can put it in a bag. It can be yellow. It can be blue. It can be whole grain. It can be gluten-free. We can have pita chips. We can have veggie chips. We can have sun chips. We don't even know what those are. We like them anyway. We have an entire aisle dedicated to what was already a perfect food. That's going to be the same thing with meat. We all love meat. Meat's not going away, but you're going to have more options, many of them healthier for you, many of them more sustainable, but nothing's going away. You're only getting more choice. And those choices created by these companies are going to be better for the companies because they're more resilient supply chains, more cost-efficient supply chains, and better for society as a whole as we secure our food for the future. And our competitive advantage. You know, you don't want China to have all the food technology and the U.S. not, for example. So, and you look at going off on a little bit of a tangent, but you look at the Middle East. Clearly, water is an enormous problem there. Beef, tremendous user of water. So you see countries around the globe are innovating for more efficient food for their nations. And the U.S. is going to have to keep up. So, but the consumer doesn't have to do anything. You're not losing. You're only gaining.
Okay. Well, all right. So we've talked about the things that are going to be supported by our economy and the global economy going forward. I've already mentioned the anticipated growth in plant-based innovation. So what are some of the investment opportunities that the EATV ETF looks to capitalize on in the next decade?
We really believe that all the growth is going to happen in the supply chain. And so it's those B2B companies, you know, very hard to get retail shelf space. So it's hard for that consumer product to break out. But those more efficient omega-3 oils and more efficient and regenerative proteins, you know, rather than monocropping soy and corn and wheat and alfalfa, food that has protein and fiber. Do we give that food to people? No, we give it to animals, and they need land and water and more time, deforest more so you can grow more, monocropping, which is difficult for the soil, depletes the soil. And, you know, just in this really long, inefficient supply chain. So if you started diversifying proteins and you have more options with fava and barley and chickpea and other things that would be healthier for the soil, give consumers more options, make supply chains more resilient. I think you're going to be seeing that, more diversified proteins. And I think you're going to be seeing those technologies like fermentation. Think about this. This is kind of a fun story. So we've been fermenting foods since the dawn of time. It's nothing new. We do it for tea and beer and kombucha and bread, yeast. So fermenting, biomass fermenting in particular, very well known. Well, what if you started fermenting microbes and fungi? You could very quickly, in the span of 3 to 4 hours, make the same amount of protein as you need a year and a half and lots of natural resources like land and water and trees to get protein from a cow. Same amount, you've saved a year and a half and a lot of natural resources. Now, when you biomass ferment something like microbes for protein, you have something that is a blank slate. It's very bland in taste. And then you season it and you have the meat that you want. These kind of things are happening at a rapid rate, such that companies like AB InBev, largest fermenter in the world, is now fermenting proteins as well as beer. So, and it's an important point to this is very exciting for the investment opportunity. It's not that costly to take a beer fermentation tank and make it into a protein fermentation tank. Technology's there. You know how to, you know, make the fermentation tank. Not that much is different. So the cost for food systems transformation and that environmental bump that you get from it and that food security bump that you get from it, much less than, say, electrifying the entire grid for electric vehicles. So food is a really fast and cheap lever to solve some very large societal issues like food insecurity, climate change, deforestation, even food pricing. You know, it's just not that expensive to ferment protein. So I've gone off on a tangent, but just to say that these technologies are happening and it's a very exciting time.
So the technologies in some cases, as you're suggesting with fermentation, are already there and they're already being used to create other kinds of products. It sounds like what we need to really focus on is the consumer habits and the consumer desire for different kind levels of taste and that sort of thing. It sounds like that's a major driver within these changes. And let's talk a little bit now about who the stakeholders are behind these innovations.
Yes. And we can talk a little bit about the innovations themselves a little bit more, too, if you'd like. So as I said, VegTech Invest, and anyone can go to that website and check out either the ETF or the company website as a whole. We're really focusing on that supply chain, that B2B player, and the large multinational companies that are really getting ahead of the curve to have sort of equity placement, if you will, in being first and leading food innovation, because we believe the change is going to happen really quickly. The stakeholders, it's such a perfect storm. Governments around the world, for reasons we discussed, food insecurity and natural resources use. Industry, this is what's really interesting. Industry wants better supply chains. They want cheaper supply chains. They want more resilient supply chains. Also, remember, we have AI coming, leading to more information for the consumer, more transparent supply chains. Food has a very dirty supply chain. So animal agriculture, in particular, large polluter, they externalize those costs to society, but the eutrophication of water. So, you know, where do animals go to the bathroom? You know, your land and water. And there are 80 billion animals in factories. So that's a lot of, you know, going to the bathroom in your water. You know, 80 billion is a lot. So, you know, these kind of supply chain issues are becoming more and more transparent with AI and a more knowledgeable consumer. So industry wants this change as well, I guess is what I'm saying. And then the consumer wants to be healthier. We see health and wellness trends continue to grow. Knowledge about health continues to grow. So all three stakeholders want the same thing at the same time. And I actually don't believe it will be driven by the consumer, the poor consumer overwhelmed with good information, but also bad information, you know, so there's accurate information and there's not accurate information. Both is out there. I think it's going to be mostly driven by industry. Industry that has the money for R&D, that has the advertising budgets to discuss and communicate with the consumer, and industry that wants to make more money. And this is a good way to do it.
Okay, so I think there's a place in the human body that you may get some pushback around this this kind of innovation, and that's on the taste buds, on the tongue. How are all of these innovations in the foods that we eat and the proteins that they're made from going to be gradually processed into the food that we're actually buying and consuming at the grocery store on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I think something that's going to pop up on shelves coming soon, I'll call it, let's say within the next 12 months, and they're in shelves already, but on a small basis, for meat would be blended products. So let's say half beef and half mushrooms. Mushrooms already very umami in tasting, very hearty in tasting, but it helps the company by reducing their cost. You know, beef has undergone tremendous inflation. Cow herds were decimated in the California drought. Price volatility for beef continues to be extreme, a lot driven by climate change, but not only climate change. So that's very hard for the consumer. So here, if you blend it with mushrooms, you're getting that same taste. You're getting something you know. You're coming down on price. You're alleviating some pressure on the supply chain. So I think you're going to see those kind of innovative products. And I don't think consumers will come kicking and screaming as long as the price is low. It's really, I honor the taste bud, I do, but it is price, price, and more price.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes sense. That and in fact, I shop at Whole Foods and Trader Joe's and those kinds of stores. So I'm already seeing these kinds of changes within the meat section products that are being offered. And you're right, they're popular and they do taste good. So you know, flavor is one of the things that they are finding ways to chemically and well, I shouldn't say chemically, but innovatively and sustainably make appealing to the average consumer. So now that we've got major food supply chain companies getting into this part of our food and consumption cycle in the capital markets, what about the private sector? There's got to be a lot of innovation going on within the private sector to get new companies and companies that participate with the larger existing companies into this system. I would imagine that there are significant contributions to the food system transformation being made by, for example, venture capital firms and private equity firms that own portfolio companies that are innovators in this area. Am I right?
Yes. Yes and yes. So, okay. You know, you never know where innovation is going to come from, but innovation does need R&D, and R&D does need money. And money has been in short supply in the venture world really since COVID. Well, 2021, we'll call it mid-2021. So it's really the larger companies that can move forward with innovation because they've got the bigger budgets. That said, a very interesting stat that I think people will appreciate here is the Department of Defense has just, through the former President Biden administration's distribution bioindustrial manufacturing program.
Wow.
Has allotted 35% of their bioindustrial awards to food innovation. And a lot of those were smaller companies, venture-backed companies. And I think you're seeing that supply chain development, as we discussed, which is why we find it this investment opportunity. The Department of Defense investing in supply chain companies that are working on better omega-3s, better palm oils, replacing eggs. Remember, 65% of the world is lactose intolerant. So you've got a really strong consumer demand there to get rid of eggs, cheese, dairy for many. Meat alternatives like the Better Meat Company that works on blended proteins that can interact with meat proteins to have this blended kind of burger that we talked about, or sausage, or doesn't have to be a burger, you know, other things, dumplings, other things. Fermentation companies like Perfect Day. These are all working on supply chain ingredients to bring out these better tastes in a more efficient way. So this is why we believe, you know, when you see the government investing in this kind of innovation, the fermentation and blended products and non-dairy products, really, I think you're going to see the bakery aisle go completely egg, butter, milk free, because then you have all the allergens out, right? So many people are lactose intolerant. Many people don't like gluten. Like, it'll be one muffin for everybody. The gluten's out, the dairy's out, this kind of thing. So I these are the kind of companies that the government is investing in. 35% of the Department of Defense, who's worried about food insecurity as a national security, investing in food innovation. So I think you are seeing great nimble innovation come from the venture world, but ultimately they get bought up by the less nimble but wealthier or deeper pocket publicly traded companies that ultimately end up leading the way. This is why we invest there.
So the Department of Defense, as a consumer, a giant consumer, of course, and also as an it's essentially a place where experimentation happens, not just with food, as it's been happening for eons, but with other kinds of products and services. This is part of what we are focusing on and what the industry is focusing on to provide this kind of transition. So that's really fascinating. I hadn't even thought of it from that perspective up to this point, but thanks for bringing that into the conversation, Elizabeth. And tell our Sustainable Finance podcast followers where they can get more information on VegTech Invest and the EATV ETF. That's the symbol is EATV as in Victor, Exchange Traded Fund. Also, how can they get in touch with you regarding the topics that we've discussed in today's episode?
Sure thing. Thanks for that. So anybody can find me on LinkedIn, Elizabeth, and it's spelled a little differently, E-L-Y-S-A-B-E-T-H, Alfano, A-L-F-A-N-O. So come find me on LinkedIn. We can have long conversations. You can see all the companies that VegTech Invest is investing in through our ETF. If you'd like information on the ETF, you can Google it. I think the ticker was mentioned. So if you'd like to find information on that, you can. And mostly, I'd love to have conversations with anyone who, perhaps your investors have a sustainability sleeve. And up to now, maybe they've only been investing in electric vehicles and novel energy. And maybe they've been disappointed by novel energy's performance. So here's a way to bring in more diversification into your portfolio by investing in food systems transformation, which has an incredible, and you'll see this if you go to our website for the ticker, has an incredible positive environmental impact because we have no exposure to deforestation. We can bring down the climate impact of your investment portfolio because the emissions are so small. Just to give an example, the environmental footprint of the ETF is 1.18 degrees Celsius change in temperature. That's what all the companies together do, according to Ethos ESG, an ACA global company.
So they're well within the Paris Agreement 1.5 degree change.
Exactly. Now, okay. Paul, take a guess. What do you think the S&P does?
S&P is probably close to 3 would right. be my guess.
2.86. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. where everyone's investing. That's where we're heading. Okay. Almost at 3. So, if you have a sustainability sleeve, it would be an opportune time to include food at least as a third and get that diversification and get that opportunity.
Well, listen, thanks again to Elizabeth Alfano of VegTech Invest for joining us in today's episode. And our followers can join me again next week for the next episode of the Sustainable Finance Podcast. I'm Paul Ellis, your host, and that's where we are at the Sustainable Finance Podcast.